Mpumalanga supports the bid. I deliberately omitted Limpopo because it's the province where yours truly comes from, so I want to be the last. But protocol dictates that I will close this thing.
The legislature adopted this negotiating mandate. The legislature mandates the permanent delegates to participate in deliberations at the negotiating stage and to support the bill.
That is not an case to also support the bill. Colleagues, Northwest State are still busy with the negotiations. Honorable Seki is briefing the committee as we speak. But the majority of provinces are supporting the bill, so it's not making any difference. Yeah, can we go to VESCAP? Honorable Novello Met.
Thank you, Chairperson. Western Cape Province of Parliament resolved on the 23rd of October to support the bill without any amendments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The Western Cape also supports the move that Matatiel be part of the Eastern Cape. Now is the time where the one and only peaceful province, Limpopo, will indicate their position for this bill of concern. I'm happy to announce in this meeting, humbly, with a smile, by the way, to inform this committee that the province, the peaceful province of Limpopo, have given yours truly the mandate to support this bill without any amendment. Signed duly by the relevant person, I submit. Now, from this mandate, you can see that all provinces, except one that isn't here, that's the Northwest, are supporting this bill. But we, as a norm, we'll follow all procedures. We're going to take shortcuts simply because all provinces are supporting this bill. We're going to allow provinces to go and do the right thing and give us their final mandate, because this is a negotiating mandate. We are expecting final mandate on the 14th of this month. And the committee will sit and consider those final mandates from those respective provinces. But up until now, colleagues, let me thank you for just a minute. Yes, yes.
I represent the Eastern Cape. I want to make sure that the mandate of the Eastern Cape has been properly conveyed in support of the bill. I just think our nature is related.
Yeah, speak to a mic, just bring a mic, but yeah, I'll respond to it, but speak to a mic, but
I'm saying, as a matter of record, I'm here to represent the views of the Eastern Cape provincial legislature. I just wanted to ensure that the mandate of the Eastern Cape to support the bill has been carried forward.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nazo, and thanks for coming, Chief. We appreciate our special delegates when they take this work very seriously. Thank you very much, Chief. Yeah, we considered your mandate. We went through it and read it. And lucky enough, the province is supporting the thing. Thank you very much, Chief. So then, from Honorable Ntuli.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine it's about the second one of the Constitution 13 Amendment Bill to be finalized on the 14th. I've got a request from KwaZulu-Natal. They were saying that on the 15th, they'll be deliberating on this issue on the 15th of November. They will be deliberating on this, so they requested that they will send the final mandate after that meeting. It means then if we deliberate on the 14th, KwaZulu-Natal won't be able to meet that deadline. So I'm making a request if KwaZulu-Natal can be accommodated so that we deliberate on the 15th, maybe afternoon or whatever. But they've said definitely, because they are applying that the plenary or the legislature must wait for the final mandate. So it will be sitting on the 15th. That is my request. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Zuli. Coming from KwaZulu-Natal, that's the province that is directly affected. I mean, we can't ignore their request. But can I check either Lapis or Petra? Please approach the bench. Now? Yeah, let's welcome Dr. Van Herden. Thanks, colleague. Thanks, colleagues. This committee for you. We don't just do things haphazardly. Honorable Nazo, your province chief, so when are you comfortable with the request by the okay. So then you are even better than some of us. I was just checking with the department as to whether I will write check. Can we allow the province to exercise their rights as well? You must remember, colleagues, if one of the two provinces, that is called KwaZulu-Natal SMK, if one of them can say no, we are not part of this, the whole bill will just lapse. We can't continue with this parliament. Even if eight provinces can say yes, if one of those can say no, this won't see the light of the day. So, colleagues, let me hear your view on the request by KwaZulu-Natal that we give them chance so that the legislature will have to adopt this bill, and they are proposing that they will sit as a committee in the morning, in the afternoon, they want to adopt it formally. So, what's your view on this one, Honorable Mac?
We agree to speak. Yeah, before we agree to the request.
Lapis, let me hear your voice.
I think it's a good decision, Chief.
Right. No. I think we're going to be raising something that we have to adhere to. Let's agree to their request. Now, therefore, it means, let me check with my office, which will be the next date of the committee were going to consider the final mandate, because I want it to be recorded.
Maybe Chairperson to share with the committee is that according to the schedule, it was supposed to be debated on the 20th of this month. And there is a rule to say there must be 3 working days for the plenary after the committee has taken the decision. I did raise that in the whippery. I did raise in the whippery as we are from the whippery, and there was a consideration of saying that maybe they will be able to shift the debate to the 22nd, but they were still going to be in contact with the office chairperson. Thanks.
Yeah, I think we can still meet on the 16th. We can still meet on the 16th to consider the final mandate. As I said, we don't want to flout any rule. We want to follow whatever rules to the book. We have learned a lesson in a very hard way. But thanks, Honorable Ndudu, for alerting us to that 3-day rule. I remember that for the report to be submitted to the council, there must be a 3-day between the committee and the council sitting. No, it's fine. The 16th, maybe before we continue on the 16th, let me hear Honorable Nyanda.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the 16th, the WIPARI will be having a workshop. We are from the WIPARI. We discussed that on the 16th. Actually, this workshop was supposed to be on the 15th and 16th. So we decided on one day, on the 16th.
Yeah, because we're dealing with legislation, I think if you can be excused, but let me get this confirmation from you with here. Well, this is one of the things that we cannot take a chance on it. We can't, since it's from the Crucial Court, we can't really take a chance. But let me hear the week first. I'm blessing my committee about 3 weeks. Let me hear the other 2 weeks, if you can try to talk to the power that be to choose some of you to be part of this meeting on the 16th. And I will make, and I will do it.
Now, Chairperson, I agree. And I don't think it will be that long, so we can maybe excuse ourselves for maybe an hour. So I think we should go that route and maybe raise it in the open. Thank you.
Yeah, something came up again, but by the way, the 16th is on a Thursday. Party caucuses.
Thank you, Chairperson. I do agree that something has to be done, but there is another alternative where we can apply in the council in a manner of a resolution to be raised to waive the 3 days rule. That is another option. Thanks.
Yeah, I want us to avoid that rule. I want us to avoid that one. I want us to play straight out to follow the rule to the book.
Chairperson, thank you. Just 2 matters. First of all, 3 then. The 16th, according to my calendar, is on a Friday. Mm-hmm. It's on a Friday. That's the first thing. The second thing is my recollection, and perhaps the committee must take this on advisement. The 3-day rule does not apply to the NCOP. It only applies in the National Assembly. So perhaps we can just confirm that aspect as well. I'm not certain. As I said, we have to take it under advisement, but I don't know if the rule book with me. Chairperson, the third one, if that rule is applicable, if perhaps just some consideration can then also be given when the same members but a different committee will consider the cross-boundary bill. Because if the rule applies, the same, it's going to have a knock-on effect. So I think if we can just get some guidance on the scheduling of that bill, I know it's not your purview, but I think it's something that needs to be taken into account, the scheduling of that particular bill as well.
Thank you. Same thing, Dr. Bauer. Now, on the first one about the three-day rule, now it also applies to the NCOP. I know because I'm chairing that subcommittee in the NCOP. Now it also applies to the NCOP for having that particular rule. On the other one, I'll talk to my colleague, the Honorable Shikaya, to indicate to him, because the two bills are like things. Yeah, like since you pass this one, that one cannot be implemented if this one is not passed. So and that one can be implemented if this one is not passed, you know. Hence I'm having this thing. Yeah, I'll convey the message to my colleagues to show to him the importance of us fitting as quickly as we can. Yeah. So we agree on the 16th. So if it's Friday, I think we are fine, but we have to meet us in the morning. I know Friday is whatever, but we don't have a choice, Malcolm members. Especially on this day. We can do whatever on any other thing, but not on this one. Yeah. The committee agreed that we are going to consider the final mandate of the Constitution 13 Amendment Bill on the 16th of November. The venue will be confirmed duly, but it will be, we'll commence our meeting from 9 so that we finish and allow members to catch up with their flights. Especially those who are connecting, like yours truly. Yeah, that's it. Anything from you, Petra, and you are happy? I have not seen such a smile from these two gentlemen, you know? Yeah. But anyway, I'll send you an invoice, if you don't mind. I'll send you an invoice. You can have it that way, that's easy. Yeah, that takes care of that particular item as well. Now, the second item, colleagues, let's now communicate and interact and intercept at the same time. I want us now to communicate and intercept and register things and not register things. Do this or not. Let me thank our colleague Gabriel Gates, Honorable Nazo, for coming. Thank you very much. Appreciate your coming back. Thank you very much. I want to welcome the three departments who came to also be part of this meeting. We are now dealing with the RICA, the interception bill, the famous bill in Parliament this year, very famous. I wonder if the process is juicy or what, I don't know. In our last meeting, colleagues, you remember there were issues that were raised by you, colleagues, after having listened to the service provider and after having gone through the bill, you raised some issues that you said the department must go and look into. One of the things that was requested the department to see if there can be a middle ground between themselves and the service providers. But I was made to understand that they didn't meet because of different interests. So, colleagues, can you allow me that let's not entertain that one. I'm just informing you that they didn't meet. So, but they were glad that the service providers made their input. They were not set by us. And let me also announce, colleagues, that I received a correspondence, a letter that was directed to me by the Minister of Safety and Security, Honorable Charles Makula. The letter is distributed to you, members. The Minister is raising some concerns about some provisions of the bill as it stands. He is requesting us, this senior house, to effect some amendments to some clauses. But before we go to that, I'll request my friend Dr. Jacob to come to address us. And the Department of Communication is here as well. I wonder if where are your colleagues, madam? If they're here, they must come and join you. So that they come and address the committee briefly. The department as well, before the meeting, they talked to me. They wanted to raise a few things that they want the committee to consider. I'll give them a space as well to talk to us about those. Let me formally announce that on Sunday, while I was asleep, some people came into my room through the window and took my cell phone without my permission. So I reported the matter to the police. They took those fingerprints from wherever at the scene of crime. Unfortunately, up until now, Dr. Jacob, I haven't received anything from the police. And my cell phone is gone. I was out of circulation for the whole week. The people who came to my rescue for me to communicate with my family is Honorable Julie, Honorable Mac, and Honorable Musik, who made life easy for me to talk to my family because they are the only ones who could give me their cell phones to use. Thanks, colleagues, for really assisting me because it's not a secret. That very week, the mother of the nation in the Machuela Crawl, that is my area. She was hospitalized for the whole week, so I couldn't communicate with her. But because of your colleagues, I was able to talk to my wife, who was in hospital for the whole week. Yeah, the rest is history. Let me not say more, because the people who are going to talk to me after this meeting, because I raised some serious concerns and I was disturbed, but let's not spoil it, but I was not happy how things were handled by some other people. That's all I will say now, Lauren. That's all I can say now, Lauren. Yeah, welcome to everybody. I can see our service providers are here. To come and enjoy this meeting, to listen to whatever is going to be said by the department and ourselves. Welcome, Honorable Director. I received you, and you are not there. We apologize that you'll join us a bit later. Thanks, colleague. Yeah. Who is a brave person who wants to talk to us first here? Let me allow Lawrence to talk to us about a few things that you want the committee to consider. Either yourself, or Cyril, or the beautiful lady there.
Inaugurated, yes.
Yeah, can we listen to you? Police, who are now on that bill, the intersection bill. The department wants to address us briefly about something before we listen to Dr. Jacobs and the Department of Communication. Over to you, Mr. Professor.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask you, Vishal, you know, I think Sal is going to deal with it. Chair, there are a number of little technical things that have cropped up, and with your permission, we'd like the committee to consider them. Really, they're based on the concepts that are in the bill already, but just take them to their logical conclusion. So I'm going to hand over, if I may, to Sorrel and ask him just to go through this. Thank you.
This is the committee. I've got the amended form of the bill for distribution to the members of the committee. I must indicate that the proposed amendments are indicated in bold. I will refer to that.
Yeah, maybe before you talk through that document, let's go ahead and tell all members are in position of it so that they follow exactly what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah, I think I can now allow Farrell to continue talking to us.
This is the chairperson. I want to really explain the background to the amendments. It's basically to more or less take certain provisions in the bill to the logical conclusion and also to correct small oversight when the bill was dealt with in the portfolio committee. Okay, the first amendment that we propose is on page 3 of the document. It relates to the definition of customer. And it is proposed that a definition of customer be amended to put it beyond doubt that a customer does not only mean a person to whom an electronic communication service provider provides the electronic communication service in kind, but also includes an employee of an electronic communication service provider or any person who receives or received such service as a gift, reward, favor, or benefit, or donation. It's to do away with a certain argument that a customer can only be somebody that actually receives a service for kind. By means of this amendment, we also want to close the loophole to include services that are actually given to a person without any consideration. The next amendment is on page 11 of the document. It's the insertion in section 40 of the Act, namely subsection 10. It's indicated in very bold letters. As the bill currently reads, I believe mobile cellular operators are required to keep the customary information that is collected in terms of section 40, 2 and 3 for ad period ad infinitum, meaning forever. I believe we insert this provision in the bill to more or less clarify the matter further and to demarcate the period for which this information must be stored. And therefore we propose a period of 5 years. The 5 year period was also, when we considered it, we looked at Section 30 of the Act, which said that the Minister of Communications may prescribe a certain period of time for which call-related information must be kept, and that period varies between 3 and 5 years. So we took the maximum period of 5 years and used that as the basis how long they must keep this information. The information must be kept for a period of 5 years after the contract between the customer and mobile cellular operator expired, whether from the way of the customer or if the mobile cellular operator actually cancel this contract between himself and the customer. The next amendment is also on page 11, and it's an amendment to section 51(3)(a)(b) of the bill. Okay, in order to ensure proper enforcement of section 4010, which require them to store this information for a certain period of time, any contravention of that section 4010 is criminalized with a fine of 100,000 rand for each day on which such failure to comply continues. The next amendment that we propose relates to section 53D, it's on page 11 of the bill, and it's a grammatical error that we want to correct. The phrase provision in 51CG, we propose that that be substituted with the plural form, namely provisions. Okay, the next amendment is on page 13. It's an amendment to section 62.6b, and what we try to do is to mirror section 4010, as we discussed previously, and also make it applicable to section 62.6 of the Act. And section 62.6 of the bill deals with the registration of historical customers. The effect of the proposed amendments would be that mobile cellular operators must then also store the information that is recorded and stored in terms of section 62.6 for a period of 5 years after a customer has cancelled his contract with the MCO or MCO has ended the service provided to the customer. It's basically the same information that is required to be stored in terms of section 42 and 6 of the bill. The next amendment is on page 14, and it's an amendment to section 62B, paragraph A of the bill. And we propose that a reference to section 62C must be inserted in section 62B of the bill, to ensure that mobile cellular operators will have to inform juristic persons and persons who rent out cellular phones and SIM cards of their obligations to comply with section 60C of the Act. I will later on, or directly after, discuss section 62C in the bill and also amendments proposed thereto. If you look at page 15 on the bill that was distributed to you, you will see that there are certain amendments that have been affected to section 62C. Basically, section 62C requires from juristic persons which provide cellular phones or SIM cards to their employees to keep record of the particulars of these employees. It also requires persons who for reward hire out cellular phones and SIM cards to record and store the particulars required in section 42 and to verify the personal particulars of their clients. And in terms of section 62C, this information must also be stored for a period for 5 years, and furthermore, failure to comply therewith is criminalized. The amendments that we propose to section 62C is mainly to mirror section 40 of the Act. The proposed section 62C has been redrafted to provide that juristic person who provides a cellular phone or SIM card to a person in its employment must, firstly, record the particulars required by section 42. Furthermore, record the date on which and the period for which the cellular phone or SIM card is provided to a particular employee, and furthermore, verify the particulars and address of the person by means of documentation contemplated in section 43B. The suggested amendments will ensure that sufficient verified particulars are available to identify and trace employees should a need occur, and even after an employee has left the service of the juristic person. I think this is mainly, although it's directed at small businesses as well, mainly at large businesses in Italia, also government departments where there's actually hundreds of employees in each service, and it might be difficult to trace and identify a particular person. The next amendment is on page 16, where we insert subsection 4 to section 62C, and that's basically, we mirror section 47 of the bill, mainly to compel a juristic person who provides a cellular phone or SIM card to a person in its employment, and the person who rents a SIM card or cellular phone to another person to provide certain information to law enforcement agencies who wish to apply for a direction. The last proposed amendment is also on page 16, the insertion of subsection 5 to section 62C. That subsection basically mirrors section 48 of the bill, and compels a juristic person who provides a cellular phone or SIM card to a person in its employment and the person that also rents a cellular phone or SIM card to another person to report any false information that has been submitted for verification purposes to a police official at the police station. Thank you, Chairperson.
In addition, Lawrence or Madam Bot?
Yeah, I think I'll put it quite clearly. Thanks, Chair.
All the words in bold are the ones that you are proposing that they be added into this case.
That's great, Chairperson.
Okay. I thought I'll come back to members, but I feel Honorable Panyade wants to come.
Mr. Chikeka, I am still waiting for our copies of the proposed amendment. I think that somebody went out for it.
Yeah. That's one copy of.
You can have it duplicate, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure they're making copies there. Yeah, I think Akona went out there, she's still making copies. Yeah. The state law advisors are here, I'm happy. Thank you very much for coming. You're making my life very easy. My life in office, what makes people happy to know that what we're doing here, also here, Lukile. Welcome, madam. Yeah. Colleagues, let's not engage this input now. Some of them are thinking we can accommodate some will check if it is in line with our thinking. But we'll come to that later. Maybe for now, let me allow Dr. Jacob. I wanted to address the committee and hear your views on the bill, because as I said, I received a correspondence from the minister who raising some concerns there. Let's hear from the other mouth from the department. Over to you, Dr.
Thank you very much, Chair. And firstly, I want to thank the chairperson of the committee for the invitation to the police service to make a comment on the bill to the committee. Chair, I think by far the South African Police Service is the biggest user of the bill, both in terms of interception of communications as well as the use of detailed billing or the call-related information, which is mainly the subject of this bill. Chair, I can just mention a few very big cases. In the Free State, the biggest ever case in the Free State relating to robberies, S versus Madal. Then there was the case of S versus Nkuna. It was the disappearance of a police officer where the body was never found, and I think it was actually legal history made where the murder was actually proved without the body. And both these cases were solved by means of extensive use of analysis of call-related information. I can also say that in many cash-in-transit heists, etc., this instrument also played a huge role in the solving of the cases. Chair, there's just a few concerns that the department has. There were some other issues, and I believe they have been solved in the bill that has been approved by the National Assembly. There are four matters that we want to share our concerns with the committee. The first one is, Chair, we believe it is not actually necessary to have registration of both the handset as well as the SIM card. Whenever a handset without a SIM card is actually of no use, and whenever a handset is used, the SIM card is inserted in it. With the service provider, there is a record kept of on which handset the SIM card was being used. Chair, in terms of our investigations, we can actually link the SIM card and the handset by means of the call-related data that's provided to us. So that's the first point, Chair, that we don't believe it's actually necessary for registration of both. As long as the SIM card is registered, that is sufficient for the investigation. Chair, the second concern that we have is the issue that there are quite a number of households in South Africa where a minor is head of a household. In terms of the bill, it would be impossible for such a child to obtain a cellular phone except with the intervention of some adult, merely because a identification document is required in order to obtain a SIM card. Chair, then linked to the first issue, we believe that if Parliament would legislate that only the registration of a SIM card is necessary, we would prefer that the provision is inserted into the bill that the service provider should keep what we call handset profiles. It's also called IMEI mapping. Chair, in layman's terms, this is a record of which SIM cards are being used in a specific cell phone. And as I've said, these records are being recorded at the moment. But instead of 5 years, the police would like that records of the IMEI mapping to be kept for 10 years. Chair, especially in organized crime investigations, these investigations can continue for a number of years before the case is solved. Chair, the following one is the issue of foreigners visiting our country. The requirement that all those SIM cards or the that your cell phones must be registered when they enter the country, we believe that would cause a huge inconvenience at the port of entry, clogging up of visitors, and although there is a provision inserted in the bill that the minister may, during certain events such as 2010 soccer or whatever, make an exemption in respect of this requirement, we believe that with the present volumes of visitors, etc., at our ports of entry, this requirement for registration is very onerous. Chair, I also believe that there's almost nowhere in the world where this is actually a requirement. We could find one country, and that's Eritrea. It is really something that we feel that is unnecessary in terms of crime investigation. Chair, the following one is the obligation to report the loss of a cellular phone. We believe when a cell phone is stolen or when a SIM card gets lost, that must be reported to the police. Where SIM card or cell phone is stolen and the loss of a SIM card. But we don't believe it is necessary to report to the police just simply the loss of a cell phone. If it is not been stolen, it's just gotten missing or broken, we don't believe that it's necessary to report that. But other than a SIM card, we need to keep record of a SIM card at all times. Chair, that is basically the input that we want to make from police side. And as I said, I think this is also based on our experience in terms of crime investigation to date, and also the type of cooperation from the service providers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jacobs, for that input. Communications. Over to you, madam. Or are you still waiting for our colleagues?
Yes, Chair. I'm sorry, I'm not in the position to give I'm not mandated to give the DOC position on this. They said they were coming, the two DDGs and one chief director. They're on their way.
Okay. They must be feeling joy, yeah. From 10, they're on their way up until now. What time is it now? 11:30. The snail's pace. Yeah. Colleagues, we just received a very touching input from the department. Yeah. I want us to check the. I think the proposal by the department. We're still going to engage those. As you have seen from the letter by the minister, I think that Jacob was adding on what was said by the minister. When he spoke to me as well, he was saying no. But it's up to us now to say we agree with the bill as was passed by our colleagues in the NA, as amended. There were few amendments brought by the department to agree with the proposal by the concern raised by the minister. Or as a committee, we are going to take another route. And it's up to Madame Boetsa, Farrell, and Lawrence convince us otherwise. Do you want to come in now, Farrell? Or you are still trying to grapple with what was said by Dr. Puerta, Dr. Jacob. Colleagues, do you want to engage these ambitions now? I'll come to you. I read now, Madam Puerta, Lawrence, or can you pause a bit? Yes,
Chair, perhaps I should just at this stage respond. The suggestions that the police have now put on the table were submitted, similar suggestions, about 6 months ago, when the Portfolio Committee was still considering the bill. I was requested then to consult with the other law enforcement agencies. That's the National Intelligence Agency, Secret Service, Defense Force, the National Prosecuting Authority. I don't know, there might be one or two more. We could not then at that stage reach unanimity on these amendments. There were people who were opposed to the suggestions made. I also met with the Office for Interception Centers also attended this meeting. So we could not reach unanimity on the amendments, and it was then decided that the Portfolio Committee would continue their deliberations on the bill. The suggestions that were put on the table at that stage were similar to those proposed by the mobile cellular operators. The Portfolio Committee, as you know, eventually decided to go ahead with the bill as it is. At that point, the view was expressed that the executive should not really get involved in discussions and deliberations on amendments to the bill, because the bill was before Parliament. And as I indicated, the Portfolio Committee then rejected the views that were expressed at that stage. So, Chair, I'm not sure what the views of the other law enforcement agencies would be on the recommendations put forward by police at this point in time. So perhaps they must also then get an opportunity to air their views on the amendments proposed by the police.
In other words, as you said, they made this submission 6 months ago and they were not accommodated.
That is correct.
Okay. Yeah. Can members, can we engage these proposals now? No, before I noticed your hand there, Honorable Lero. Let me check with the other colleagues develop his information to talk to that submission before I allow members to talk to it. Madam Boata, Sarel, and Lawrence.
Mr. Chairperson, thank you very much. I think that you might recall at the last meeting, I think, which was held on the 17th of October, I think the department made its position very clear in the sense of, insofar as the Romy is concerned, we are worried about the timeliest receipt of the information. Secondly, that it's untainted kind of evidence and it will be admissible in our court. And one of the problems that we have at this point in time is that we're not so sure what is the process used to obtain the information, and that links us to the tainted evidence concept. And furthermore, Mr. Chairperson, you might recall also that during the committee meeting, we pulled out a document which refers to what we call prepaid roaming services, and we were very much concerned about the fact that if there is such a thing as appears to be on the face of that document and also other documents that we were able to get from the internet, is to say, if that is the case, how can we make sure that insofar as the users of pay-as-you-go services, that we will have the required information available? And I'm speaking specifically about the personal identity. I'm not talking about the poor dated information. I'm talking about who is the owner of that phone, who is the owner of the SIM card, etc., and what is the whereabouts of that person. I think that is what we said last time, also insofar as roaming is concerned. And then insofar as the let me just check. The handsets are concerned. The indications of the department was and is still the following, is that we deem the ownership of a seller's home to be very important, and that must be determined. In presenting evidence in court, the state must be able to prove with certainty who is the owner of a seller's home. There must be a legal basis to establish who the owner of the phone is. It's not enough for us to be able to prove ownership of the SIM card. If the registration of the INEI number is required, it will be easy for the LIAS to identify the owner of the cellular phone and prove ownership thereof. Even if that phone has never been used, but is, for example, left at a crime scene or it was stolen. When an INE number of a cellular phone which was stolen is registered against the name of a perpetrator, it would be easy to trace that person since his or her particulars would be readily available. And chairperson is, there was this court case in the High Court, it's S versus Sitfum Party and four others. I think it's the Baby Jordan case, if I'm not mistaken, where there was this problem where a short messaging service, what we call in short a SMS, was sent. The INE number, which indicates which unique handset was used, was not reflected on the billing. The billing mean is that the statement that you get from the service provider, and it could thus not be determined which seller of the phone sent the SMS. So those are the things, I think, in short, that what we are worried about and why we would like to see the registration of the INEI number as well. As we indicated on the 17th as well, I think we're looking at different approaches. For justice, as I said before, it's not only just to get the perpetrator, but really to make sure as to the admissibility of the evidence as well. Insofar as the questions of the household and minors are concerned, there is a problem in the sense that there's only one way in which you can really ensure that there's not loopholes in the legislation, and that is either to require the identification document or not to require that. And what we've done in all, if we say we, it means that it was also in the hands of the committee at that stage, is to say, is to what extent can we include things like for purposes of an orphan, that you can also, the caregiver, in terms of the Children's Act, can then also be included as a possibility of how these minors and orphans can get cell phones because of the fact that the adults can produce the ID document. I think that is more or less what I have to say. I don't know whether Sado or Mr. Bassett has anything to add.
I just want to add, Chairperson, I think the impression was created that once the cellular phone and SIM card is used with each other, the INEI number, that is the handset number, will always be available in the systems of the telecommunications service provider. I know there are certain services which are rendered by a mobile cellular operator where the INEI number is not always available when that kind of services is used. Although I think the best example in this regard is when the SMS is sent, but there is also other services.
I've got nothing to add at this stage. The two issues that haven't been dealt with from SAP systems, the 10-year mapping and then the report of the loss of the cell phone. I don't want to say those entirely new because they're not, but I think those are things that we need to have a look at.
Yeah, I know, I'll give you some dogs to respond, Dr. Jacobs. I'll give you some to respond, but let me hear, because Honorable Leru, I ended up there a long time ago. Let me hear you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, first of all, I think that what Dr. Jacobs said makes a tremendous amount of sense as far as I'm concerned. But obviously, and I think that is exactly what the Minister wants in any case. But I think it is vitally important that we hear what the other law enforcement agencies have to say. I don't think we can take decisions solely on what the police has now said, and I think it will help us a great deal if we can really hear what the other agencies have to say.
And then lastly, we've never spoken about the cost of implementation and whether what the police are now suggesting we should do, whether that would greatly minimize the cost. Because in the end, it's going to be the consumer that will pay for this. And I've got no idea what it's going to mean to the consumer, how much extra cost is involved in using and having a cell phone. Thank you, sir.
Yes, I'm not sure whether the relevant department alludes to the submission by Professor de Kooke from the Johannesburg University. That's just my question, because he raises a couple of very, very valid points in his submission. Can I just ask whether they have perused that when they made the proposed amendment?
Yeah, they'll respond to that there. Any other question, colleague? Yeah, Madam Boatsa. Did you manage to peruse the document from the University of Johannesburg?
We didn't have enough time really to look at that. Safe to say is, I recall at a stage in the portfolio committee where the whole issue of fraudulent IDD documents were also discussed, and I think the view was then, but it's open to change to say, is that, yeah, it's like we're talking about driver's license that has been defrauded and whatever, but you can't just say then, don't you just throw out the baby with the bathwater. To say it really was taken into account, but the thing is that there are a lot of valid ID documents in circulation, and of course that is also why we in the legislation proposed that it must be, if a false document has been produced for purposes of verification, that must also be reported to the police, so as to try and also prevent that kind of situation. But we didn't have much time, but we as a department are fully abreast of the developments pertaining to the regulatory impact assessment process that has been accepted by Cabinet, and that is in the process of being further developed by the President's Office and Treasury. However, it's not without problems at this point in time, because the implementation and whatever is still being attended to. So we've looked at that, but I don't think personally myself is not in a position really to say these are our final and official responses to the proposal by the university or the questions by the University of Johannesburg.
Chairperson, just maybe relating to cost, the committee must be reminded that this bill is actually nothing new. It was already in the Act when it's trying to amend. The Parliament already deemed it necessary that we must go ahead with the Act. And the bill is just to try to amend it and to accommodate the mobile satellite operators. They've actually requested us to amend the bill to the Act to make provision for a more streamlined registration process. So I think Parliament already considered the matter of cost and the Act was passed.
I'll welcome on this. I got a message that you'll join us later. Thanks for coming, Chief. Maybe to remind members, the concern as it was raised by the minister and Dr. Jacobs, and even by the service providers, is to register the handset. I want just to be systematic. To also register the handset, where the minister and the service provider themselves say it's not necessary. And justice says no, they want it. But those who are going to monitor and police this particular legislation, they say no, it's not necessary. Because in any way, they're able to can trace this. The second thing, yeah, I know if you're not going to, I'll give you a chance. The second one is where the, you know, there are many homes where the handed by my children. Some because their parents died because of this or that other reason. What's going to happen to those particular poor child children? But in terms of this legislation, there's no exemption to that effect. They're also compelled to can follow the rules. That's the concern by the minister and Dr. Jacobs. And they're raising a concern again about the roaming. I think that's also a problem to the department that's supposed to police and monitor all those kind of people who are coming to the country. Because if that's not done, someone must police that, must monitor it. And it's SAPS who must do that. And SAPS are saying, no, that's not necessary. They can't cope with the kind of burden that we're throwing at them. The reporting of the lost cell or whatever, that's also a concern to the department and the minister. Yeah. We'll come to that. Let me hear Honorable Ntuli. I was just trying to capture these things so that we know which areas are raising a concern. Honorable Ntuli.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. I just wanted to find out from Dr. Jacobs about the reporting of handset, whether that is going to help the community, the owner of a cell, whether the police are going to investigate, I mean, using this information to find out where the cell is, because I look at the people to say they must report just for when it's not going to help the owner of the cell which is lost. So I'm not sure whether you were covering that when you were saying that it is not necessary, but I thought it, Dr. Jacob said it is necessary to report. Thanks.
Just to verify that, whether he was saying it is necessary, and then when it is necessary to report, are the police going to look for that lost cell? Thank you.
Is there any purpose for reporting? Who benefits after you have reported them? Honorable Chair.
Chairperson, thank you. Well, I think, Chair, there's nothing wrong with the SAPS having a second bite in this discussion, because the National Council of Provinces is a different institution from the National Assembly. You might find that the other person might not listen to you properly, but you might find that here they might be listened to. As they were saying, that once the bill is with us, it's within our ambit and jurisdiction, we will take decisions around not even the executive can be able to engage on. My wish, which I'm not sure if it is possible, would have had an agreement, to obtain an agreement between the law enforcement agencies around the registration. Or matters that are raised. My view is that clearly the SHS, they are saying this thing is superfluous, this registration of the handset, which to me, they are saying it doesn't harm anybody. Therefore, if there is no harm, others require it. Why don't you do it? It doesn't harm you. My view then would be that on the first issue, clearly I think the registration of the handsets, if it assists, as they were raising an issue around the admissibility of evidence, as an evidence that is original, that is untainted,
it's quite important. If you raise issues of the happiness, but they are raising that, sometimes you have a problem. But the thing that objective here really is to ensure that we close all loopholes in dealing with crime. Therefore, if that is the case, my inclination is that it doesn't harm anybody, register both of them. Because it doesn't harm you, there's no problem in doing so. But that's a logical view that I had on the issue. On the second one of children who are offended and so on, we are trying to make a law here, a law that must be watertight and airtight. You can't then allow a situation where some exceptions are done because criminals are going to use that loophole. And in South Africa, as I know, there is no body who doesn't have a relative or a person that you're related to in one or the other, whether or not. Therefore, my view, Chair, my inclination is that people must be registered, all of them, so that you ensure that there is no loophole that can be used by people who have been criminal intentions. On the matter of a lost cell phone, I agree with the view that says if you destroy it or this SIM card is no longer in working, there's no need of reporting it. Really. I agree with that view because it is not going to be used by another person. It is destroyed. Therefore, there's no need of reporting what is destroyed. But I think what is stolen is maybe there's a requirement to report it because you must ensure that you are not found guilty of it or you are suspected because people think that it's still yours whilst it's no longer yours. Therefore, I would agree with that. But having the same question on the SAPS, whether do they have the capacity to deal with these issues? And I'll be happy to hear from them, if I report this thing, what are they going to do? I know that when you report a car, they put you on the system. There's a system where it is circulated across the country to say that the car is stolen and so on. Therefore, anybody who says it must apprehend it alone. And that assists. But on this one, I'm not sure what would be the objective. What are they going to do when this thing comes? On rooming, to me, I would be happy to get an expert advice. You know, I was reading yesterday on the paper where they were talking about South Africa being gone up in terms of the international competitiveness and attractiveness to foreign investors. It's gone up, I think it's number 37 now, out of 158 countries. They are raising, sometimes in some areas where there are quite a lot of categories, some were scoring very low to 95, down and so on, in some areas. The reason that they are raising is over-regulation. Over-regulation. Now, for me, I'll be happy to hear the view of those that are opposed to the view of the SAPS. What are they saying about the over-regulation? Because we must make South Africa as a country to be easy to do business here, to be easy to enter the country, of course, with the capacity and capability to deal with those that are dealing with crime. I'll be happy to hear on those, from those, because this thing of arriving at the airport, we are inconvenienced, we are many there, shoes. People don't like shoes. It's a natural phenomenon of people. And I think as a country, we took a deliberate view that says we want to eliminate shoes. I mean, an example of that is on the social ground. That people used to choose to arrive there early and so on, so you are first on the shoe. And that's why people go to the bank, they do other forms of accessing their money. Now, I'm saying on this one. The chews at the airport, you arrive at the airport, you have to bring chews and throngs of chews and so on. Are you not making the country uninteresting? If you think about South Africa, you think about these things, say, no, I won't go to that country. Now I'm saying, those that are arguing against
they must convince us, they must engage us in this meeting, so that we are able to take decisions that are informed based on their arguments that they are putting across. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shikwega, Honorable Darrell-West.
Chair, yes, a lot of it is very technical, and I'd like to hear from the cell phone operators. In this letter from the Minister of Safety and Security, states the SAPS is already in a position to obtain the details of foreign users without a formal registration process. Anybody coming in from anywhere in the world, the police or SAPS are in a position to obtain the details. But then it carries on further. This capacity can be further enhanced by providing in this bill that cellular networks must only ensure that details of roamers communication data, now by communication data I take it as the actual message or the voice message, are readily available on the request of law enforcement agencies within a period of 12 hours of that MSISDN IMSSI number becoming active for the first time on the host SA network. Are the cellular networks, can they comply with that within 12 hours? That from the activating that they can give a copy of the transcript of the conversation. I'm just asking, I don't know. It's technical. A lot of this is very technical. And it would be interesting to hear further from the cellular network so they can comply with that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Sarah wants me to allow Sarah Sobra to speak. I'll use my discretion. They had their bite, but because I'm too democratic, I might allow them to respond to some of these issues, depending if they smile at me. Let me hear Dr. Van Heerden.
Chairperson, yes, and again, I'm ignorant about this. If I talk to you through my computer to you and you talk to me back, what is the... Is there any possibility, or the existing act, or this particular act, does it provide for interception in a matter like that? Who is the service provider there? That's also a technical thing. If anybody can answer that, I would be grateful. I don't know who to address this question to, but that's something that I was considering. Whether the legislation at this stage provides for that. And if not, whether the proposed legislation will also capture that form of communication. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on the very same instrument, I was going to raise. I'm happy that. Advocate von Heerden has actually raised this. All we know when we talk of cell phones in the past, we were told that there are numbers in this gadget, which we don't even know where it's situated, but probably the police can unpack them and be able to trace that gadget was actually sold to so-and-so. Now, the interesting part of it is that how are they going to, if and when people are coming into the country, there will be a lot of people buying these, gadgets. If they are lost, will the police be in a position to actually be able to trace all these things if they are being used somehow? And interestingly, probably the last question, that people are now doing away with cell phones now of lately. The new generation are now using the laptops and computers. If I bought now the laptop or a computer, is there any number in that computer that will identify or connect me with that computer? Because any person can use my laptop and communicate with the people who are whatever. I've seen that happening, but now, how are they going to, are they also going to
have the same thing, that I also going to be impacted on what, how they're going to monitor this. I'm happy that Dr. actually came up with this. Whether there's any number that will relate to that particular condition.
As a member, I'll also give my own opinion or my views about some of the things, but let me allow the Madame Bota, Mr. Passetti, and that handsome gentleman over there, Farrell, to respond. From then I'll allow Dr. Jacobs to talk some of the questions. Yeah, who wants to start this?
I'm going to hand over to the experts over there, Chair.
Chairperson, yes, relating to the interception of computers, the Act make express provision that Minister of Communications, or rather, that all kinds of communication services must be intercepted. Inter alia, also a computer. And yes, computers are fully interceptable. There is ways to do it. It's mainly by, there's various ways to do it. The law enforcement agencies have the necessary apparatus to intercept certain communications on computers, inter alia email, and things like that. And yes, the Act will handle that and be applicable to it. Are they going into further details how exactly it's done? Not possible.
Yeah, before Madame Bota come in, several advisors, you are free to come in whenever you feel you want to chip in. Even my parental legal advisor, Navarra, feel free to come in whenever you feel that you want to chip in. This is our meeting, not my meeting, it's our meeting. Madame Bota, I want to add something from this.
Thank you, Chair. I just can confirm that we must remember we are only dealing now with the sections of the Principal Act that relates to mobile cellular operators. Apart from that, and that is what is also in the letter of the University of Joburg, we must remember there are separate sections dealing with what we call a fixed line, telecom line. So we're not dealing with that. And so I think many of the answers to the questions raised in so far species and that is concerned is in the Principal Act. And there are different processes how they will deal with that. And I think that is also, if you look at the Act, we will realize that there's a whole process through which the interception will take place, whether it's mobile, internet service providers or the fixed line operators as well. And that is why there's an office called the Office for Interception Centers and why we have interception centers provided for in the Act, that that centers will take care together with the staff in the centers, that they will take care of all the issues relating to the real interception of communication. Then insofar as the lost and stolen or the report of lost and stolen cell phones are concerned, I think the department view at this point in time would be, is this not a matter that we can deal with later on? Because in the proposed amendments that are in the bill before this committee, we didn't deal with Section 41. You will see if Section 41 has not been amended, and that is something that the committee may wish to consider. Secondly, is that talking about the reporting of a stolen telephone and what benefits it will entail, I think Dr. Jacobs will, at least in this instance, agree. I think it's for the question of blacklisting of cell phones to try and, as a measure to combat the theft of stolen phones, meaning that if it's then blacklisted, but it can only be blacklisted if it's reported, then to try and not to get it into the system of or to be allowed on the system of the mobile cellular operators. That is all that I have to add. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Relating to the evidentiary issue, Chair, I think the case that Ms. Huerta referred to is also referred to as a Rodriguez case. Incidentally, in the bail application, it was the link between the cell phone and the person was accepted, but later it was disputed in the trial itself. I believe there was a conviction at the end of the day. Chair, I think we must be realistic in terms of the linking of a cell phone to a person. It is like a motor vehicle. There is a presumption in the Act that if a motor vehicle was driven, that it was driven by the owner. I don't think there is such a presumption in terms of a cellular phone. Chair, if a cellular phone is registered in my name, it doesn't mean that I've been using it at any particular time. It has been used by my wife, my children, a colleague, anywhere. It will always remain a question of fact and physical or other evidence on whether at a specific stage. If you have an intercept, for example, and you can make a voice analysis, you can say it is that person who did it. With SMS, it's even worse, in the sense that if an SMS is sent, there's no voice analysis or anything into it, it's just a message. So I think we must be realistic in how far you can go by registering a handset to prove it was the cell phone was being used by a specific person at a specific time. Chair, on the reporting of stolen cell phones, I do agree with Ms. Huerta. I think the most important way in which you can curb the theft of cell phones is to make a stolen cell phone useless. And Chair, with this registration process that we have, and we entered into an agreement even before the Act was partly put into operation, with the mobile cellular providers, we have the system of blacklisting. Once it's reported, they blacklist the phone, it's taken off the system, it can't be used anymore. Of course, you must realize some of the stolen cell phones are taken out of the country. And for that reason, we propose to bring the regional police chief organization, SARPCO. We have had submissions to them, and the principle was adopted in the whole of Southern Africa to import this method of blacklisting stolen phones. So that if a stolen phone is blacklisted in South Africa, it will also be blacklisted in the neighboring countries. And we are rolling out that process as well. So, yes, I think the registration or the reporting of a stolen cell phone is very important, as well as the SIM card. Chair, we must realize that the only way in which you would track that cell phone after it is stolen, if you would use depot billing, is if the phone is still being used. And we are it is almost like having to choose one of the options. If you've blacklisted the phone, there won't be any calls further made on that phone, and you won't be able to do tracking on the phone on where the phone is in the network, for example. Chair, the proposal that was made that maybe the other law enforcement agencies should also get an opportunity, I can only support that proposal. I don't think the SAPs want to speak on behalf of other departments, and I trust that it would be of assistance to the committee. Chair, just another addition on the computers. There is two ways that communication can take place, either by means of a modem through a fixed line or by means of a 3G card. In the case of a 3G, a SIM card is being used, and once again that emphasizes the importance of the registration of a SIM card. With a fixed line, the modem is being used on the fixed line, and the number of that fixed line, of course, will be the identity of the communication with that computer. Chair, I trust I've answered the questions that were directed directly at me. Thanks.
Right. I think we're getting somewhere. As I said, I have my own opinion about this thing, but let me allow Honorable Leroux to
Chair, listen, just one thing that I'd like to know. The Minister says SAPS is already in a position to obtain the details of foreign users without a formal registration process. Is this accepted as the truth or not? Because if I go to London, I put myself in my pocket, I start phoning immediately, they come back to me and say, thank you very much for visiting the United Kingdom, blah, blah, I go and I do nothing, and I just do it like that, and everybody's happy now. Can they just tell me, is that telling a lie when they say this or not?
Yeah, no, I think justice must look, to Jacob, you said that, and I think justice must respond. Sarah?
Well, it's actually an allegation by the South African Police Services that they can do it. So, I believe they must answer it.
I think our concern is justice does say, yeah, maybe there is a way how they manage to get the information. But what we're saying is, how timely is that information? Secondly, if the information that is alleged to be received, does that also take into account the information, if there is such a thing as we read on the internet of the prepaid roamers, the users of prepaid roaming cards, and to what extent will the information received by police be sufficient also to identify the person and not only the call-related data? I think those are the issues that from the court's perspective, that are very important for us. So maybe if that can tell us more about the prepaid, the use of that, and whether the information that they do receive relates to call data, or does it have in all instances a reference to the identity of the person, the delay or the time it takes to get that information, because surely there might be instances where you really would like to get that information very soon. And to what extent is the experience linked to all countries and not only specific countries?
No, I think on this one I must come in. I mean, as the chair of this committee, I mean, it would be wrong of me not to protect my minister. So this is what the minister said, that they are able to do this thing. So for us to question whether the minister is right to say that getting this information, I think it would be really wrong of me to allow this to continue. When the minister said no, in the department, they are able to get this information, where am I to challenge that? No, I can't do that. I mean, I was undermining the authority of the minister. I don't know, Honorable Leroux, you're right. I mean, we can't really. Let's get something else. But on this one, I think it's not even debatable. Because this letter you can see, this comes from the minister, not from the official, from the minister also, who is addressing it to the chairman of this committee and to you, colleagues. I don't think the minister can lie to Parliament. That would be the first time, really. That's not even the thing that one. It is true, police can get information. But the other thing is what one of the things she was saying. We're just over-regulating, that's it. Because it looks like South Africa is under siege. We're under siege, we're expecting criminals to come to our country. That's why we're making this hard and fast rules. We're not going to do it. Yeah, what I'm going to do now, colleagues, Akona, is there fresh tea outside there? Can you check, please, because I want to do some other things. Okay, right. I want to give 3 minutes each. 3 minutes each to the service providers. Unless it's Dr. Jacob is going to come in now to respond there, but I don't think this is going to say the minister is right or is lying. Don't respond to that. I think the minister is correct. We have confidence in our minister. But you can't lie to Parliament. Don't respond to that. I want to give 3 minutes each to the service providers session. To respond briefly to what was raised by either the department or the concerns raised by the minister, or to what members have raised here. When I say 3 minutes, I mean 3 minutes. Because you have your bite. Today we just here to observe. But because of the request made by one member who said I must allow you to respond, I'm doing it for that table. Who is the brave one to start from the service providers? The brave one can start in what particular order? I know Parliament is always brave.
Well, thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Fundamentally, all I would want to say, I'm from Vodacom, is that what SAPS is actually saying is quite true. And let me start first by one aspect that the SAPS was talking about call data records. When they're talking about call data records, they are not meaning the actual interception of the conversation. It's actually call data records in relation to who calls, with what number, using what phone, at what particular period of time. And for instance, if you take roaming is an agreement between two networks, not between individual subscribers of that particular network. Now, the people who roam indicate to the network that they move from that I'm going to a particular country. And as a result, that person is activated for roaming. You get to that country. If there's a signal in a particular area, you immediately link to that network. If both Cell C, MTN, and Vodacom have got a roaming agreement, as an example, with Celtel, when somebody gets into South Africa, that Celtel subscriber will immediately log on either to Vodacom or MTN or Cell C. And the record of that call, time and all, is recorded at the particular network that that person is roaming on. If it changes to another network, it will be logged onto that network. The availability of information relating to that call, not the conversation, but the call having been made at a particular time with this cell phone, with this number, will be available from the network immediately it is requested. That's one aspect of it. The other aspect that the SAPS has raised is in relation to call profiles. It is correct when the SAPS says the acquisition of the various records of a phone linked to a number, linked to a particular call, linked to a location where that call was made, is able to be correlated by the SAPS when they require that information. I don't think there's any legislation that could ever be written that would close all loops. It's a correlation of activities by various law enforcement agencies. Where, for instance, I'm sure when you meet behind closed doors, possibly with some of our intelligence organizations, they will tell you that sometimes, especially for the organized crime, that instead of blacklisting certain phones and doing this and that, it is better to actually listen in order to catch all of them and actually track them over time. They use different methods in order to do that. But it's a combination of all these agencies and the people who these people use networks of. That cooperation that causes actually the tracking of the different activities of the individual. I will end there, Chair, from my side. But I just wanted to indicate that's what happens, and that's how you find that it's possible to do that interception. There are interception directives, by the way, that have been published for fixed line, mobile, internet service providers, because for internet or computers, each computer actually has got what is called an IP address. And that IP address is an identifier of that computer and where it's located and all. But the other point that we had pointed out I think last time, is the fact that we must remember that, especially for organized crime, they do countermeasures. Some of the things that we are going to contend with is actually cryptography, which people load onto cell phones. Today, I think it's in Germany where that happens. You can load a software into your cell phone and actually encrypt all your conversations. That's what we'll have to contend with. But the other thing, with INEI, I just wanted lastly to point that issue which we pointed out last time. Today you can take a computer, take a phone, link it to a computer, and actually change the INEI number. You can do that, especially with these new phones. With the older phones, it may be a bit difficult. But some of the things that are happening. Presently, you will find people loading, what is it, Skype, on cell phones. Skype is the one that actually bypasses even the network operator. I load it on my cell phone and load it on somebody else's cell phone, and they actually bypass Vodacom, MTN, and Cell C and communicate across the world. It's some of the things that are happening, but if you look at what the SAPS is saying and what the law enforcement agencies are saying, and essentially what the Department of Justice is trying to do, the combination of that together with mobile operators is what is designed to fight this. So a legislation has to create a cooperative environment rather than an environment that simply onerous and makes it impossible to do certain things, and then you have to contend with having to pay the fine of 100,000 every day if you haven't complied.
Thank you, sir.
Before I allow MTN to comment, can talk to the child and family's phone that is owned by a child who is in the child and family, the registration thereof.
I think the whole thing the whole registration process, desirable as it is a nightmare. Let me indicate first and foremost. Secondly, purely because you would have seen in the comments, I think when the legislation was still in the National Assembly, comments about the issues that were raised by honorable members here about who has an ID, who does 1, 2, 3. I mean, presently, my son and my daughter have cell phones. My son is 14 years old. I got him a cell phone. Which ID am I going to use? I'm going to use my own ID in order to buy him a cell phone and give him a SIM card. And I'll probably take that risk in that my son is not going to be a criminal. And actually take that phone and give it to him together with the SIM card. And I know it's him who's using that cell phone. The risk I'm running is that if it's stolen, I must simply report it and get blacklisted. If it's not, I hope that he doesn't commit any crime, because it's in my ID, which then boils down to the issue what the Dr. Jacobs was raising about the whole issue about law of evidence. I won't venture into that. I'm not a lawyer either. But it's a problem. It also gets compounded with addresses. Because out of the 11 million households in South Africa, or 11 and something million households, I think it's about, the last time we checked, I was still at the Department of Communications, about 1.2 million households had addresses in South Africa. So, of course, what the Department of Justice has tried to do is they've taken all the various possibilities and tried to put that in the legislation in order to address that aspect. But it is going to be a nightmare with orphans who must try to get an ID with some people will have to just simply rely on relatives. And because of your relatives, you must then go and ask them to go and buy you a SIM card because you don't have an ID, and because you don't have this particular document, and because you don't have an address, you'll approach relatives, you'll approach, fortunately, we've got extended family members, family system, and possibly that extended family system is what will help other people not to be put in a digital divide, because the possible consequences of the legislation is that presently, we've got roughly now about the subscriber base is close to 40 million. Well, in SIM cards. We've got close to 40 million SIM cards.
which means South Africa is literally having almost everybody able to make a call, at least a voice call. I mean, the difficulty is to internet. Now, in a voice environment, you South Africa is more or less eliminating what you would call a digital divide. But in other environments, that digital divide is still there in the internet environment and all. You start with the registration process and cut off a lot of other people, you literally reverse it back in one stroke of a legislation, if we're not careful how it's implemented and what it provides as a way. We simply do that. Fine. At the end of the day, what is the percentage of criminals in our society? Is it 90%? Or is it 10%? Don't we find ourselves criminalizing the rest of our society? It's how we implement the legislation and how it's put in such a way that, on one hand, it addresses the concerns of the Department of Justice, of the legislature, of the various law enforcement agents, and us as concerned citizens and operators, on one hand. And on the other hand, just making sure that those who are intent on bending our laws are caught. So it's a very sensitive balance. I think it will be very difficult to address fully that problem. But, well, an attempt has got to be made, but also there must be allowance and understanding within boundaries. It's not a question I can answer in a clear-cut fashion, to be honest with you, Chair, but it's a problem. It's a problem which we have to confront as operators. There's a worst thing. Overall, we can put systems in place that will more or less try and say on the balance of probabilities, this ID is fraudulent, or this ID number is incorrect, or something like that. But how do we really get certain? Except with the cooperation of an institution like the South African Police Services, will you be able to do a cross-verification of some of these systems in order to ensure that it's proper? Thank you, Chair.
Now, I think my daughter is 12 years, and I bought her herself. And I bought a son, he's 14, I bought myself. And my son, it was even when he was still 12, up until now. So I mean now, if this becomes an ad, for me to buy them a cell phone at this, they must register first. So if you don't have an ID, it means for you to have a cell phone in Africa, it's a no-no. Okay, right. No, I don't know. You've read something now that it's tricking my mind. No, thanks for alerting us. Can I go to MTN now?
Thank you, Chair and Committee Members, for this opportunity to address you once again. I don't actually want to repeat what my colleague Patamila has stated, so I just thought that I'll perhaps respond to a couple of changes on the amendments. Please note, this is not our official comment, but just some thoughts that I had while sitting over here. Just to confirm that our customers at the moment do include all prepaid and postpaid subscribers that are on contracts that on our respective networks. Okay, so we're actually fine with that. In relation to the storage of information, we do at the moment store information. There's other legislation that does cover this in South Africa, and in terms of that, we do store information. Regarding the change to Section 62C1, okay, there's now an obligation on juristic companies. Just to clarify that so far as policing of this information, the network providers can only do so contractually, to the extent that our contracts allow this, you know, but from a practical perspective, we can't actually police what documentation a particular corporate keeps. For instance, say a Standard Bank, for them to keep this information, they need to be bound in terms of legislation, and it is not the obligation of the network providers. Okay? Just in the verification process, yes, once again, you know, that is very difficult to implement from a practical perspective, because the people that are actually doing the verification are not specialists. They could be a salesperson working in a store or from Edgar's, okay? So I think due consideration needs to be given in those particular circumstances. And, you know, just also relating to the question of minors registering SIM cards, you know, there is other legislation to this extent that needs to be taken into account, and other practicalities. You know, for instance, is it something that we want because of necessities and urgencies? And to what extent do we need to balance this for children to have access to cell phones? Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Can I recognize the selfie? See for yourself.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and to the rest of the committee members. My two colleagues have covered most of what we intended to say, raise as well. Maybe just two short comments. From Southeast side, we'd like to again raise the issue of roaming and the impact that may have on business. As previously indicated, we have agreements, international roaming agreements with 395 networks across the world. And it would be basically a question of having international travellers roaming in South Africa or not having it at all if we're required to register these people. Because from a technical perspective, we cannot on an individual basis switch them on and off and allow them onto our network or not. And that implication on business is a very important consideration to take into account in finalising these legislation. And then just lastly, if you receive an SMS, it could either be generated from another cell phone or from a laptop or a computer. There's no way to distinguish. That is why I thought I should just respond to Charles' point that you can't see the equipment that it was used from, because you wouldn't know if it could originate from any type of equipment. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
So you can in fact be able to locate where it comes from. It's possible.
You wouldn't know where it originated from, whether it's from a laptop or another cell phone. It will show you if it's sent from one cell phone to another, the number, but if that person hides that number, you won't know if you're a recipient of an SMS. Sorry, my colleague just has something to add.
Thank you, Chairman, Honourable Members. It is possible to, when you receive an SMS, that number is not related to another cell phone, but it's related to a network element. For instance, if you receive an SMS from a WASP, there's a number related to that. Also, when you can generate SMSs from going onto several websites that's available on the internet and send SMS from there, you would also don't know where that SMS has come from when you receive it, necessarily. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, colleagues, I think there are issues that were raised where we had to, as a committee, consider. It's a case in the room and taken so that Jacob want them to listen to this thing so that when they need to go and negotiate, they know the instruction from this committee. Sorry, Mr. Rootman is disrupting my meeting. I wanted to hear what you were saying, Mr. Rootman. I know you're trying to get some consensus on this thing, but at the same time, I'm disrupting my meeting. No, no, it's fine, it's fine. I hope you are indirectly trying to assist as well. Let me share the code if you're having anything to say, because I think what we need to do now, because as a committee we can't ignore the concerns raised by the minister here. But what I want also the two departments go and meet and see, because from where I'm seated, because I was trying to suggest if you don't agree, we are going to strongly propose that there's no need to register a handset. We are going to remove that. And we are going to strongly suggest that roaming is removed as well from this thing. Unless we are convinced otherwise. And there must be another way again. Now, in terms of the time period for registration, I think here we I as was said by one of the speakers here, Paganida, with the giant loss of we can live with the 18 months, not 12 months. Now the question of storing the information to the service providers, on the bill was saying 5 years, and on the other side the minister saying 10 years. So we can see how we can go. All those items I'm raising, I wanted the two departments to come to us with a concrete with some agreements. If not, there's a point we're going to rule on those ones. And on the reporting of a cell phone that is no more used, that is broken or just that's it. What is the use of reporting something that cannot be used? Because that two things for the sake of doing them, if they're not assisting us. I also don't see any need really to kind of report it. Yeah, so, and I'm happy Madam Bota said that they will look into this thing of the minor and child-headed families, whether they're owning a cell phone. I got my own opinion from my legal advisor, but I want to see if can move, because we're ready. In our next meeting, I want us to close this thing and get done with it. But as Honorable Shikera said, we are housed on our own, we can make our own decisions, and we cannot be dictated to by any other person. But we'll listen to any voice of reason, and we can't be stubborn to say, because we are an independent house, we'll do even things that are not supposed to be done. We'll be reasonable in whatever we're doing. Now, those are a few issues that are still outstanding. But in terms of the other sections on the bill, I think we are seeing the same damage. In the proposal by the department, I think we don't have any qualm about it. I'm glad that there's, as I said, Madam Bo, that there's something that you agree between yourself and Dr. Jacob. It is good that there's something that you can say we agree on this. What else am I leaving out that it had to be addressed, that it seems to be contentious still? Let me check with the Justice. Is there anything contentious that you think you ought to address first? Because I want to give some instructions to go and work. And I'll demand that for you to come back to me as quickly as you can. I'll give you when I need the information. Nothing. Dr. Jacobs, is there anything that you think had to be looked at?
No, thank you, sir.
Let me close my eyes and check with the service provider. So is there any other thing that you think? But I'm giving you more time. No? At the same time, you haven't given me a good service. Is there anything that you think I have to look at before you, Honorable Mac? Seriously, anything that you think we have to go and consider? Nothing. MCA?
I would just like to say that if there's anything that the committee needs from us, any further information, we would be more than happy to respond, even if questions are raised after this. Thank you.
Okay. Vodacom. Thank you. Good. Here we are. I think we're getting somewhere. Let me inform colleagues that they were still waiting for communication. That's still on their way. The Department of Communication is still on their way. Those are supposed to communicate this message to South Africans and people abroad. So our visitors from abroad, we're still waiting for this department to communicate to them, you know. They're still coming, but they're here in Parliament. They're still coming. Yeah. Colleagues, is there any other marching orders you think we must give to the two departments? Honorable Mac.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, I would just like to know, and for my people out there, the storage of this information is at the moment 5 years. If it goes to 10 years, then we as users will be paying. And I would be very much interested. What am I paying now? And what will we be paying if it's 10 years? What will it cost the customers out there, our people? What is the cost? And maybe just to know that.
You know, one other point here. I wonder why Honorable Nyanda, this time, she's quiet about this. You know, in the first briefing, she raised a serious point to say, but because you mean even our people who are staying in this those I don't want to call them squatter camps, those settlements in the rural areas where they don't have addresses, they've got nothing now. You're now going to require them to. I thought you'd raise it, but you're not raising it. Maybe Lawrence has spoken to Mami, and I think that's why she's quiet now. I know Lawrence can convince you. Lawrence,
Chairperson, I think this is on a question of minors. Now, of lately, Chairperson, the reason why I'm raising this, any child that is born today gets the birth certificate and the ID number is there already. Now, the question is, if the ID number is there, can when I buy a cell phone for that child and use that number that is there in process?
Mr. Chairperson, yes. Okay, the answer is no. I think identification book is identified in the Act what precisely needs to be used to verify a person. But there's also another reason why birth certificate is not utilized in this instance. That is due to the fact that there must be some kind of face-to-face verification that is actually the person standing before me. I think that's the reason why you get the ID book with a photo in, to make sure that it is the specific person in front of you. And no, the birth certificate is not going to serve that purpose.
Right, anything Honorable Tuli?
No, sir, I was saying that it's the face and the fingerprints which are not there in the birth certificate.
Helen, anything for me? Darius? Not today. Mamianda? Not today. Meg? You said already. Dr. Van Herde? Not today.
No, I think that the registration question is going to be a nightmare on you. Again, this Johannesburg Commission is very good in guarding the problems around identification. Thank you.
Honorable Shikaga? Not today. Wonderful. Let me now call him Mr. Roberts. I've been calling him Sarah all the time. Let me call you by Mr. Roberts. Anything from him,
sir?
No, sir. Thank you, Chair. Safe to say thank you very much for the opportunity.
Madame Borsa? Mr. Professor?
I think thanks, Chair.
Mr. Rudman?
That is appointing me. Right. On that note, those are, I think we've been the same instructions on how to go and sit and talk about. As this chair, I think I'll be nice. Can I get an indication from yourself in the form of a written response that the process that you think, I know you are going to agree. I know you are going to agree. From the discussion that we had today, I think that's why in the organization that I'm belonging, when you go to a conference, the branch will give you a mandate to say, go and vote for duty. But at the same time, they'll say, but be ready to persuade it if you get there. You know, I might not go there with the full mandate of my branch, but at the same time, they said, just be flexible to be persuaded to agree with other branches. They say, no, this is not a good candidate. That's what I thought I'm going to do in December. Yes, and they give you a mandate as well to go and persuade other people to agree with you. Yes, exactly. So, and here I know there is some tension between the two departments. No, I'm saying the citizen writers, because you said you are available, will also call if, because some of the clauses say that too technical, they need some of you to have those expertise. Tina will send politics. I'm told the S1, there will be this finger lunch. It will be served where? Just here, outside, or in about 10 minutes from now. Can I remind colleagues that we're having a sitting today at 2, and we're debating the mandating bill. The people who are participating, I think they know themselves now, they must be ready. And those are going to be the speeches was done by Honorable West and Manyanda. The treaties about Argentina. So, on that note, let me thank the department. Thanks very much, because you know, this comes deep from my heart. I'm glad to get officials who are prepared to go an extra mile to try and make this thing clear to a committee of parliament. And this is not in any way trying to outshine each other. All of you are trying to say that there was a legislation that is implementable. And that will assist in uprooting these unwanted elements, so-called criminals in our country. At the same time, looking at us not legislating for the sake of doing it, because we might send a wrong message to country to say, no, Africa is under siege. We might legislate even how we go to the gym. Let's not do that. But at the same time, if there's any loophole where we think criminals might take advantage of some of our legislation, by all means, let's do it. But as I said, I know by Friday, this Friday, I'll get a word from the two departments to say how far we have gone. You know? You can send me a note of what you agreed and what you didn't agree upon. Our next meeting is, our next meeting to consider this bill, when is it? On the 9th, on the 9th, we're meeting, hopefully, we'll be finalizing the bill. Hopefully. On the 9th, we're finalizing it. And, come one, come all. Let's see how far we can go. But before the meeting, can these two departments talk to me? Talk to me. You know how to contact me. Intelligence committees or intelligence spooks. They know how to deal with some of these things. Talk to me before we start the meeting. Either day before or whenever, I'll be available. So that we'll see what they need to do before the actual meeting takes place. Convey my message to the job of the minister for Arena, talking to our committee. I'll send a formal response as well to
to the concerns you raised. If there's something from you colleagues, let me thank even everybody who is here. You are all invited for this finger lunch. That would be provided to this committee.